Today on the Nerd Outcast podcast, we discuss Die Hard. Hello and welcome to the Nerd Outcast podcast. I am your host, Chris Bashan, and today we will be discussing the Die Hard series. I have assembled a group of nerd experts with me today who seem to know these films pretty well. Today my guests are...
Lawrence Kern.
Hello, Lawrence. How are you doing?
Awesome.
You ready to discuss some Die Hard?
Yeah.
All right.
A few laughs.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And across from me...
Zach Munn.
Zach, how you doing?
Swell.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me back.
I think you were on our last podcast.
The Legend of Zelda.
Yes.
That's fun.
Great.
Rob Shoemate.
Hello, Rob.
Howdy.
How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
You ready to discuss some Die Hard today?
I am indeed.
Okay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
And finally...
Sean Okerberg.
Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
You've got a lot of notes.
Right. It really doesn't say anything, though.
Yeah, but his notes are
his
like
notes are better.
Full pages.
And it's like a doctor's script.
So, those are my experts for today. You may have noticed that we do not have an outcast among us. Today we're going to be discussing the Die Hard films, and we pretty much all agree that the first one is the best one, but we all have very differing opinions on whatever the second best movie is. So, what we're going to do is go through, discuss each movie, and as we come to the ones that we don't feel strongly about, whoever does feel strongly about them can attempt to defend that movie. Hopefully, by the end of this whole discussion, we will know who the outcast really is.
We know.
Keep looking at me.
It might be me. It might
Don't
be
give
me.
It away.
It might be me. All right. Well, you know what? Let's go on and jump right in with the classic 1988 American Christmas action thriller. I had it described to me as American Christmas. I don't know why that is, but whatever. American Christmas action film directed by John McTiernan, starring... everyone's favorite, Bruce Willis. A quick synopsis of this film. Bruce Willis is a New York cop who travels to LA to visit his wife on Christmas at her Christmas party in the Nakatomi building. The building subsequently gets taken over by terrorists or people who you think are terrorists. And we're not going
to... Spoiler.
Spoiler alert, he wins. No, he has to essentially go through and save the hostages while at the same time trying to defeat the terrorists. So it's Bruce Willis against Alan Rickman.
Wow.
All right, so first off, my first question to all of you would be, did any of you see this in the theater?
I don't remember.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Good. 1988. It was rated R. I was 8, so I did not see it.
I was young in 88. I was 6.
My mom took me to see Fatal Attraction when I was a kid, so that wouldn't have started rating.
You know what,
mom?
Scott? We're going to talk about that.
That's a whole podcast on its own.
An R rating wouldn't have
There's
down.
Like 3 hours of material in there.
Just 1 hour of me crying. All my hang-ups.
I'm going to have to do a Fatal Attraction podcast.
Oh, my God.
Just to get your story.
Yeah, man.
Oh. I think I did, but I'm not... I know I saw the second one in the theater, but I don't remember if I saw the first one in the theater.
Yeah. Sean, did you see this in the theater?
I didn't, even though I was 45 at the time.
Right.
I did not. I don't think I saw it until later.
I was 10, so... I mean, yeah. I could have, but... I remember seeing Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's close.
Same bar.
R rating.
All right. Well, let's do this then. For those, when you first saw this film, initial reactions. And Lawrence, I'll start with you. Just gut reactions.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Special effects were great.
Yeah, they were.
Bruce Willis. I was a huge Moonlighting fan. So when Bruce Willis... Yeah, I was like, at 10, I was a huge Moonlighting fan. In Yellow Rose of Texas is what I'd watch with my mom. And when Moonlighting came out, I was so excited to see Bruce Willis in an actual movie doing Bruce Willis stuff. Thought he was a badass. Thought he was cool. I wanted to be Bruce Willis, but with more hair.
Mm-hmm. And is this your favorite Die Hard film?
Yes.
Okay. Zach.
Mm-hmm.
First thoughts.
Gosh, wow.
Now, you told me this is your favorite movie.
It is. It's my favorite movie.
Like, this is number one.
Of all time, any movie, this beats all movies.
All movies?
All movies.
Okay.
All right. And I saw it when I was a kid. This is my family's Christmas movie, this movie. This is what we watch every Christmas, the same way other people watch Miracle, and I don't even know. the Die Hard, yeah. So I saw it when I was a kid, real young, probably in when I was like 8 or 9 or something. And obviously when you're 8 or 9, stuff exploding and being awesome is awesome. So yeah, loved it from the start. And then as it went on, like, the movie gets better the older you get, when you can start to appreciate it a little bit, you know? Yeah, totally floored by it.
Okay. Rob, first thoughts?
Because when you made me think of that, I did not see it in the theater. I saw it on VHS first, and because I saw it with my friend Mike, who made me watch it, and loved it. I loved the movie. I did see the second one in the theater because of I loved the first one so much, and it is my favorite Christmas movie.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it is your favorite Die Hard.
It is my favorite Die Hard, yes.
Cool. Sean?
I did not see it in the theaters, I think. I don't think I saw it until the third one. I think I saw the third one in the movie theaters. But yeah, I liked it a lot. I think I saw it later on when I was older, you know, maybe like 15 or 16. But yeah, it was great.
And this is your favorite Die Hard film also, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we all pretty much agree that this is the best one. What is so great about this movie? I've got a couple talking points here, but I kind of want to see what you guys throw at me. What's so great about this movie?
Personally, for me, all the characters, even the ones that are just bit throwaway characters, are all fairly well-rounded. Like, I mean, from Argyle to Ellis, I mean, everybody is fairly well-rounded.
Well, let's, you know, that was one of my talking points, was to talk about the characters, so let's go on and just start with John McClane, Bruce Willis.
McClane, man, he's coming off an airplane. He's just done a flight across America, which this is one of the few movies that's really honest about air travel. Like every other movie, like they skip over it and people just walk off a plane and they're fine, right? You're on an airplane for hours. It's miserable. You hate it. And it affects you for the rest of the night, even if a bunch of terrorists attack you that night.
I love that he's terrified of flying, despite all the crazy stuff that he does in this film. I love that he's terrified of flying, because I think, I don't know, I just, that brings a certain human fear.
Maybe he's the fourth one to go back and fix some of the continuity errors with his fear of flying, because all of a sudden, in the third one, he's not afraid of flying anymore. And then he explains it in the fourth one.
Okay. Yeah. We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
The fourth one.
Plus, his fear of flying leads him to making the greatest decision in this movie, to take his shoes off.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And be barefoot the whole time.
Fist with your toes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just sets off the idea of this character who's not Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's not, you know, this huge Superman. He's just a guy that has, you know...
I'm so happy you said that, because he is now. I don't know if you saw The Expendables, but like all three of them in the same room together in that movie for the first time ever on cinema.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think that was something they were trying to really go against, was he's not a Rambo.
Yeah.
He's not a Schwarzenegger.
Well, he gets the shit beat out of him
every
movie,
he takes,
all the time.
He takes
like
a bunch of damage, which
being.
I love. Yeah.
He dies hard.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh,
he does indeed die.
I didn't
hard.
Even make the connection.
Oh, wait a minute.
That's the name of the movie.
It's not a battery.
Oh,
it's
genius.
Here's what I really appreciate about John McClane, specifically the character. He talks to himself all the freaking time, and I don't know if that was a choice or if they just let Bruce Willis improvise. Yeah.
That particular bit was improvised.
Yep.
Yeah. The bit you were just quoting right there.
The bit where he's in the
he's in the air duct.
Yeah.
And he's got the lighter.
What
and,
is the line?
Come out to the coast. We'll get together. We'll have a few drinks.
Nice.
Yeah. And then he says, "I feel like a TV dinner."
I feel most of his language, they just said, if you want to say fuck, just go to town with it. And like,
oh, it's in the 80s, man. Everybody said that.
No, but he is like so visceral with his cussing, and especially when he is like fighting for his life. He's just like, I'm going to fucking kill you. And he's just like clawing all over these guys in these most brutal fights.
Specifically that tall blonde guy when he's
killing him. Man. Yeah. Oh, man. That is a brutal fight.
But he doesn't kill him.
But so close.
Yeah.
So close.
Upaquita.
Now, even though he's not a Schwarzenegger character, I did notice they made it a point to not only make him a cop, but he's a cop from New York in the 80s.
Which is a really badass cop
at the time.
That's a cop that survived the 70s, which is the worst decade for any city.
Yep.
Yeah.
Come on, it's him and Axel Foley.
Well, and like the 80s during, the New York during the 80s was a horrible place. Am I correct in saying that?
It still is.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it still is, but it's
been
cleaned up.
Before it got cleaned up, it was nasty.
It was really bad.
It was real gross.
Um,
so we're here.
So what else about John McClane?
What I really, yeah, I mean, we've gone over how it was the Superman thing. Like, he wasn't a Superman, but it kind of, that kind of pervades the whole movie, is that he's just a dude, and he's like, he's counting on his hands how many of these guys he's taken out. He's like, well, I got 4 so far, you know, maybe I can, okay, that was 5 and 6. We're doing pretty good here, you know, like.
Go ahead. I was going to say, and he's also human, because he doesn't always say the right thing. First thing he says to his wife pisses her off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, and going... Oh, go ahead.
Lars. No, I was
going
to say, and he doesn't have a game plan.
Nope.
Like, that's the thing, is like, he's just making it up as it goes along. He doesn't know what he's going to do to fix the problem. And they even talked about it on one of the discs, I think, is that like, the first time he sees all the guns, the first thing he does is run away.
Yeah.
Like, he runs away from the fight. He doesn't go towards it. Like, he's trying to save his own
life.
Which is what a cop would do. It's like, okay, get out of that situation and then, you know, and then
regroup.
You can solve it.
Yeah, right. You're supposed to get away. If you're horribly outnumbered, you get away for a second and then you change the odds.
That is actually what I like probably most about this movie over the other ones, is that he's panicked. And I feel with this movie, you don't know if John McClane's going to live. It's a very good chance that he's going to die, and I feel they do a good job of keeping that threat level there, but the subsequent diehards, I feel they lose it. The moment you plop that movie in or you throw it on the screen, you know John McClane's going to be fine. You know Bruce Willis. It's almost as though it's Bruce Willis at that point, not John McClane anymore. I don't know. It's really strange. Does anyone else get that feeling?
I get that feel. I start to have if we're jumping around and like movie-wise. Like, once... I have a really strong feeling about this in regards to how I like the movies. And once he has a sidekick, then the danger towards him kind of goes away. Like, now he's got this guy to take care of. And in the other two, it's always him. Like in the first two, he has friends that are out there helping him, but he's always the one doing it on his own. Like, he's either on a walkie-talkie talking to him, or like in the second one with, what's his nut? What's the little
Alan?
Dude? Yeah, the sidekick, Leslie Barnes.
Oh.
Like, in the little bottleneck. That's the one time they're together and they kind of help each other out, but then it's always McClane doing McClane stuff. Then after that, you start adding Samuel Jackson, Justin Long, then you got the... Like,
his son.
I always really like sticking with just McClane.
Yeah.
Doing McClane stuff.
And he's very independent. Like, he's the one... He's the smartest person. Like, he's figuring everything out. Not right away. He's not, you know, mastermind.
Yeah.
But he's figuring out how to defeat all these different little obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of piecing it all together, and he's problem solving. And especially, like, in some of the other ones, he's... Like, for 3 especially, he's solving these puzzles really quickly, and he just observes, and he knows what's going on. He's a street cop. And he, and when the FBI gets involved, they screw it up. When, you know, when anybody else starts helping out, he's the only one that's really can do anything, and he's totally on his own.
I think what's interesting about that is that not until, what was it, Die Hard with a Vengeance was a script actually written for Die Hard.
Yeah.
It was either based off a book, or it was a script that was originally supposed to be something else, and they retrofitted it for Die Hard.
I think with a Vengeance.
Die Hard with a Vengeance was Simon Says. Yeah, it was supposed to be a thing, play call, and like the writer says the first half was Simon Says, and then they just changed the names to make it a Die Hard. I'm sorry, Live Free or Die Hard. That's like when they had a script that was written for Die Hard.
That was actually based on a book.
And that was it was based on an article.
The very first one based on a and it's the worst one. So
the fifth one is that makes sense. Completely
no,
written.
Yeah. If you have one original thought, let it be the worst movie in
all
a series.
Right. Well,
not the worst.
Back to
correct.
Back to the first film.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Hans Gruber.
Mm. Oh.
Alan Rickman. I believe his first big American role.
This is his first movie.
This is his first movie?
He was cast off of the stage.
Dangerous Liaisons.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. I personally love Alan Rickman. I can't really say anything bad about him. I think the only thing I could say is he's supposed to be German, and he does not do a German accent at all.
He does.
Does he?
Yeah, he has a German accent.
But the German they speak is gibberish.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
So
it's
like,
not
they
really
make
German?
It a point to make it just like, yes, it's German, European something.
They, in fact, when they released in Germany, they weren't Germans in the movie. They were Europeans.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, well, they couldn't release them as Germans because the Germans would just be confused. Like,
what are they saying?
At the time,
yeah.
the Germans
how are these
still
people German?
Against,
they don't even
like,
speak German.
Yeah.
That's,
you had the
that
Red
doesn't
Band
make sense.
Armies still in Germany, so they were very like anti-German terrorists. So you couldn't, obviously.
Cool.
Oh, they even said, I think, like, in this, they were European, but they were Irish. And they were like, which makes it really weird for the third one when they say Hans Gruber is German. And they're like, but in Germany, I don't
I'm sure they shot a scene for that one, too. Yeah. They had to switch it. But Hans Gruber, I love him as a villain because he's intelligent.
He is very intelligent.
Cool, calm, collected. I mean, he doesn't get rattled. Rules his minions with an iron thumb. And one funny thing about that, as I was reading an article, Alan Rickman had this reflex every time he fired a pistol.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
He would flinch.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and McTiernan tried to cut every single scene where he fired a gun, where you don't actually see him fire it, you just hear the shot, except for the one where he shoots, what's the guy's
the
name?
Head of Takagi.
Takagi. Yeah, he shoots Takagi. And you can apparently you can actually see him flinch in the movie.
Oh, now I want to watch that.
Right?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He just has an aversion to guns, or he just...
It was the noise.
Oh. Yeah.
And those, for that movie, they were so loud, because they didn't want to use the old sound effects from, like, 1950s, like, the thing. So they updated all the guns, and so those guns were either really quiet or deafening, and they said for Die Hard they were deafening. So, like, when you shot them, they were really loud. And that would have made him flinch, too.
I heard that they had the same problem with the Harry Potter film.
Every time Alan Rickman does it, you can see
The old wands they used to use back in the 50s.
Yeah,
it was different.
That's true.
You know, like, I feel Alan Rickman is one of those actors who does a really good job of playing himself. He'll play some variations of himself, but he's usually pretty close to him. He's like... He's
sardonic.
He's just dripping with sarcasm. He's just this sly.
Can't believe he has to work with any person he's ever working with.
He created like the Euro trash.
And I freaking love that. Yeah, I just never get tired of it.
No, he's great, man. Galaxy Quest.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, it's incredible.
Have you seen that internet video of him just knocking over a glass of water in slow motion?
Yes. That's incredible. And he's just not seen it.
Someone filmed it. It's a video of Alan Rickman like knocking over, I think it's a glass of water.
But it's like.
And it's in slow motion. It's like with a high speed camera and it's set to this epic music. And it's like, what, 10 minutes long?
It's this long and you're just watching his hand move very slowly and then you look up at his eyes and you're still looking at
it. Watch it later. Don't watch it
later. I'm going to watch it later.
It was an art piece. You'll be a bunch of actors doing different stuff. And Alan Rickman's was that. It was awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome.
Well, Alan Rickman is definitely my favorite villain in the entire series.
Yeah,
I feel he's like a really great foil for John McClane. And they get a lot of dialogue together in this movie, which is great, even though they only meet each other twice. Which I feel is something they drop in the later films. He doesn't talk with the villains as much in the later films. Some of them he does.
The third one.
So the third one he does.
He has a lot of riddle conversations. We'll get to the third.
It's coming. It's coming.
He is a great foil because he's Gruber's the planner. He's got this well laid plan that has several different options, but basically everything is planned out. And then he's not. Like, he's just flying by the seat of his pants.
Yep. So let's talk about. Probably a really odd name for a character, but Al Powell, also known as Carl Winslow, also known as Reginald Vell Johnson. Kind of his sidekick, but not really. The voice of reason, kind of the voice that keeps John McClane from giving up.
It's just someone friendly for him to talk to.
Yep.
You know, like, you want to hear Bruce Willis be friendly, so you got to give him someone friendly to talk to and bounce, you know, witty words off of.
Well, not only that, but I love that they gave this guy a character. Like, he shot a kid, and he doesn't want to use
It's a well-written movie.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hold on. Hold on. We'll get there.
Don't make me come over there.
No, hold on. Yeah, his cop is very, very even keel, trying to keep John McClane sane this whole time, trying to give him good advice.
You didn't get that with Argyle? That's weird.
Yeah, then you have every other police officer show up.
Right.
And then the FBI show up. And
the FBI.
And they are just probably the most horrible or incompetent police officers / law enforcement to come along in a while. I don't know. Was that a trope of 80s films? Does anyone know?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Working man really knows how things should go, whereas you know, kind of a kickback against Reagan and
Sean. You and I were watching this, and one thing we noticed, I feel like they went out of their way to make anyone who's not John McClane and Reginald Vell Johnson just like idiot cops. Because at one point you see the cops like trying to storm up to the Nakatomi building and one of them like cuts his finger on a flower.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh God. And it's like, these guys are pansies. Yeah. What is going on?
Well, I think that's the difference between your LA cop and your New York cop.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Which, yeah, I mean, that is a good point. He's a New York cop. All of them are LA. You know, it's just
which
different.
Everyone knows that LA cops are just
Just pansies.
Just pansies.
They're the worst.
Areas nothing was going on in the 80s. So.
No. LA is a breeze.
Gas was 59 cents in Los Angeles.
Every day a picnic. Everywhere.
Are there any other characters in the first movie you want to talk about before I move on to a couple of other talking points? You have William Atherton, the dickhead news guy, whose name I don't know.
I was going to say, you got to bring him up and Holly up.
And
Holly
Gennaro.
Let's talk about Holly Gennaro. Yeah.
She, again, somebody like working class girl that knows, you know, knows more than everyone else. Like, she's the one that's trying to keep people from, like, Takagi from revealing himself. And when
takes spoiler.
Control.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's sort of revealing, too, the kind of woman that she is.
Yeah.
As far as what we know John McClane is attracted to, you know, like she's smart. She's independent as hell. You know,
and she will jack you in the frickin' jaw.
Yeah, she'll do it. She'll do it. She just doesn't give a shit.
Nope.
And Bruce Willis pushed to have her in the movie. Like
really?
Bonnie Bedelia. Yeah.
He was the one that
was like, I want, you guys should look at Bonnie Bedelia for that. Which is interesting.
Has she done other things?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, she's done
Needful
Things.
Yeah. Love her.
Needful Things is great. but, like, she was, I did not have a thing for Bonnie Bedelia. Like, I always saw her as, like, that's a 1980s woman. The curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff
super
there.
Super perm.
Super perm. But apparently she was hot to trot back in the day like that. She was a thing. I Googled her. She's pretty hot when she was younger. I mean, she's attractive then, too, but, you know.
Okay.
Salt
of
the earth.
No, that's fine. You got a thing for Bedelia. I get it.
Hey, back in the day, so did I.
I Google a lot of things.
I feel those four characters.
Don't Google yourself at the table.
Those four characters are kind of the characters that keep this movie in motion. Mm. Everyone else is kind of an ancillary character. I mean, you kind of learn some things about them. He has a brother.
He's very angry.
He's an angry
person.
Alice?
Ellis.
Yeah.
You kidding me, Ellis?
What? This is like the craziest corporate party, by the way.
Booby.
All right, talk about Ellis.
And what does he do right before he dies? He takes a sip of Coke.
He does.
Yeah.
Product placement.
Yeah. Product placement.
Here's what you do: drink a Coke and then you die.
That's how you go out.
Yeah.
Message received.
No, so great. So great that he was blowing coke in that movie. Like, just sort of openly. And Takagi's like, Ellis, come on.
This is
He's
a cop from New York.
Jesus. Oh, the people that work for me.
In Japan, so crazy.
In Japan.
I do like that he wasn't a stereotypical Japanese person, too.
You know, like, there was a lot of Japanese terror in the 1980s. It's a really horrible way to say that. Like, there was a lot of American fear of Japanese.
Rising sun, anyone?
Rising.
Oh, yeah.
Well, like, businessmen and, like, their technology. And then he's the first to die.
Yeah. I was actually, I toured Pearl Harbor a while back and had a really guilty moment.
That you sold out the Allies? Or?
No.
Did
no,
you think about that?
I never feel guilty about that. No. There's a aircraft. The Japanese had an aircraft carrier, or an aircraft carrier that was called what's the word for Red Castle? It was Akagi.
It's Akagi.
Akagi, yeah. And so I'm sitting in this really somber museum, and you know, just like, oh, here we go, like sad, and you know, and I look at this model of this aircraft carrier, and I was like, Akagi. Red Castle!
Yeah.
Oh, so many people were upset.
Why are you laughing?
I love that movie.
It's Christmas. Like, what movie?
Joe Wakagi!
One of the, if we're mentioning wars, another little fun little tidbit, is in the three movies, they mention, every first three movies mentions a war. The first one is Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Second one is...
No, first one's Vietnam.
Vietnam?
Because mm-hmm. The two
agents.
Oh, like Johnson and Johnson.
Yeah, but then there's all. But then Takagi also mentioned Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
So there's Pearl Harbor, and then Grenada in the third one. I can't remember who mentions Grenada. But
do they mention anything in the fifth?
I don't know.
I'm trying to remember.
The Cold War? I don't know.
Yeah.
That one.
Hated that movie.
how important is it for the setting and the isolation that the Nakatomi building provides throughout this film, and the fact that it's Christmas? Like, how important are these elements to this film? Because I feel it's something they tried to replicate later on, and they just were not successful with it.
The Christmas thing, just because I think of the line, now I have a machine gun, ho, 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 ho.
Yeah, no. There's a sweater you can buy from Dark Bunny Tees that says, now I have a machine gun, ho, 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 and it's a gun.
Phenomenal.
It's awesome. Anyway.
That's incredible. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, exactly. Here, exactly. Like,
there's something. There's something to the fact that he's like trying to be with his family on this day. Like, it's the day. This is the day when you don't do anything. That is what Christmas is about. And this is the day he has to do the most work ever.
It was Christmas Eve, right?
Is it Christmas Eve or is it Christmas Day? Still, though, that's Christmas part one.
And it just the music adds to it. Like, all the sleigh bells and stuff. But
good.
Using it in, like, an ominous way, it's genius. Like, when you think back on it, you're just like, God, that's really
good music. Yeah, it still gives you the prickles on the back of your neck.
How much do you like the isolation of him being stuck in the one building, not being able to leave?
That's actually why I hated the second movie so much.
They kind of try and do it with the second
movie.
But
it doesn't work with the second movie.
I would say it doesn't work after the first movie. Like,
I agree.
At one point, Speed 2 was actually supposed to be a Die Hard movie. Because it was, it's Die Hard on a boat.
You know, Die Hard was supposed to be Commando 2.
Right, Commando 2. And it's one of those things where, like, once... And I'll argue that the second one maybe gets the closest to still stuck in something, in an airport somewhere.
Yeah,
I know.
Terrible for that reason.
But after that, they go away from that. Like, New York's like, oh, you're stuck on New York. It's like, no, man, you lose that. The first one, you can't replicate being stuck in that building, like, by yourself with no shoes on. It's brilliant.
The fact that he's doing this barefoot this whole time is great. The fact that he comes across shoes that just aren't the right size just puts more salt in that wound.
My favorite moment in that movie, and I remember cringing the first time I saw it, the first time I saw the movie, is when he says, shoot the glass.
Yes.
That's how smart you see it. He saw he had no shoes, so he says, shoot the glass to try and take his mobility away.
So good. And you're horrified that it's happening.
God.
You're like, what are you
doing? Why would you do that?
No.
And he says it in, like, garbled German. That's the great joke. Is like, what he said.
And the other German had no clue what he said either.
He's like, I don't speak German.
It's not me. You say napkin termites?
Yeah.
You know, Lawrence, you mentioned the Christmas music.
Mm-hmm.
The music for this film was done by Michael Kamen, who went on to do many other films, one of them being X-Men. Of course, the other diehards and whatnot. He had a pretty good career in the music industry before he died. One thing that I love that he did with music in this film is he gave Hans Gruber Ode to Joy? Is that Beethoven's?
Yeah.
I think that's
Beethoven's. When they're walking into the vault.
Well, when they open the vault, but his theme is playing...
He whistles it.
Yeah. He does whistle it at one point. It's also, like, just the violin portion at certain points, and it's when he opens the vault that, like, they play the full Ode to Joy.
So
and it's such a great moment.
To this day, when I hear that song, I think of Die Hard.
Yeah,
the vault opening.
No, just the music in general.
Yeah. What's so funny is it's contrasting this really horrible theft with this pure joy. Like, you're almost rooting for Hans Gruber that it's like, yes, he got through all seven locks. Yeah.
Well,
he did it.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's also beautiful about the first one, is he's not, like, so many bad guys are just pure evil, but this guy, you kind of want him. I mean, he's on a caper. he's clever, and you don't, I mean, he can't win. He's the bad guy, but you still almost want him to succeed.
And that, another thing, like, Ode to Joy, the guy fought to have it in there. He didn't want to have it in there.
Really?
He didn't want
that
it. And McTiernan was, because he's like, I don't want to destroy Beethoven. And McTiernan was like, they used it in Clockwork Orange, like, being ominous. And then he came around to it. And that's one of the things I like about Die Hard, is that this movie shouldn't have been good. Like, there was so many things going against it, like, that if they made a different decision anywhere down the line, it would have been total crap. And it's just like filmmaking.
It was one of those
that
just got through without being crap.
You know what's really strange? I don't know if this is true, but the mighty internet told me so.
Must be true.
Any of you Aliens fans?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know the very end where Al shoots his gun?
It sounds like the same music.
It is the same music.
I thought so.
And here's why. They use some of the soundtrack from Aliens and Man on Fire as placeholders. And then when they were going to orchestrate, or Michael Kamen was going to put something in later on. And then when they previewed it to the audience and 20th Century Fox came along, they were like, oh, you know what? Just keep it in there. Because they own the rights to the other two. They own the rights to the other ones. So that is James Horner's.
It actually is.
That is a bit of James.
I now
want
to look in the credits to see if he's.
I don't think he's credited.
I wonder if he got paid.
I don't know.
He had to have gotten paid.
He always.
Unless, of course, the studio owns the rights.
Yeah.
Right.
Because
yeah.
So,
it's all under the same music label.
Right.
I do know that.
He probably has a deal for getting royalties.
Probably.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah, so we're approaching the half-hour mark. Any other comments about the first movie? We can come back to it later on, but I do want to kind of push ahead to the next few films.
Right.
I mean, other than it's the perfect movie, and my tone gets really dark from here on out.
All right. So now we move to Die Hard 2, Die Harder.
Yeah, okay.
John McClane, Christmas Eve. He's at Dulles Airport, which is a horrible airport to be at to begin with.
You can still smoke in that airport, though.
In certain places.
It's Christmas Eve, and terrorists take over the airport and hold the airport hostage until they can release super awesome drug lord from whatever country he's from.
It's a fake country that they actually use in Commando as well. That same South and Latin American country is the same country in Latin America in Commando that's completely fake.
So John McClane runs around Dulles Airport trying to stop Dennis Franz, Fred Thompson, William Sadler, and a bunch of other great actors.
Oh, William Sadler.
I know. And to save his wife, who is stuck in the air trying to land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a very quick synopsis of Die Hard.
How can the same shit happen to the same guy twice?
Actually, his exact line is, "Oh man, I can't fucking believe this. Another basement, another elevator. How can the same shit happen to the same guy twice?"
Yeah, that's the full.
That's the full,
version.
Cringing line.
Think about it, will you? And that's go ahead.
All right. Here we go. So I will go and admit this is probably my least favorite of the five.
Okay. Of all five.
It's definitely tied with number five.
There are some low points in number five.
Like, there are some
low points in number two.
There are some low points.
That's true. No, I hate it too.
Who likes the second movie?
Oh, show of hands. Not everybody stand up at the same time.
Lawrence is raising his hands for those in the listening audience.
The reason I probably like it is the same reason you guys hate it.
Okay.
Might be.
Why do you like this
movie? You like it because it's terrible?
No. The fact that it's called Die Hard 2, Die Harder, they even mention the fact that, like, the same thing is happening to the same guy. I just find it hilarious. I just think the whole setup is fucking hilarious. Sorry for saying fucking. It's hilarious.
We said it left and right.
If I can get Bruce Willis, a little yippee-ki-yay.
And for me, basically...
We're not the fourth Die Hard movie here.
We're not...
Don't talk about that.
The way the movies are, Die Hard 1, 2, 3, 4, that's... basically the order I like them in.
What was your order?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The way they were made is basically the order I like them in. Just because I just really like the fact that they tried to stick to the same kind of set, the same theme of the first one. Of, it's just John McClane by himself. He does have... was it Ellis? What was his name again? You can never remember the guy.
Ellis is dead.
Yeah, Ellis is
no,
dead.
No, Ellis is dead.
Ellis is dead.
The
Booby. Yeah. His little dude. Arnett Leslie Barnes.
Yes. Short run.
He has him for a hot second. But basically it's John McClane again, doing John McClane stuff, trying to solve the problems. No one else is listening to him again. All the other cops are idiots again.
Dennis Franz, God. I just want to punch him in the face.
But the cool thing about that is at the end of the movie, they do a twist, and Dennis Franz is actually really helpful. At the end of the movie. He's no longer an idiot by the end of the movie. He comes around to it. And they do a good twist of oh, finally the army's here. Oh, no. The army's actually the bad guy.
Bad guy's in on
now
it, too.
Now the cops are coming in. And that was actually a... what was it? It doesn't matter.
Switcheroo is the technical film.
Not switcheroo, but they actually, it's a method of labeling your guns green or blue and red.
Yeah. It's a cartridge.
Yeah, for a cartridge.
So they know which ones are not loaded.
Well, that was cool. That was.
Here's where this movie lost me.
Sure.
The credits open
up. I'm going to lose this.
You are going to
lose it. I know I'm going to lose it. I still love it.
They don't actually say Die Harder. It just calls it
Die
Hard
2. They took that away.
It did originally say it on the...
Right.
Yeah.
And then they were no, that's total crap. Let's not do that. And then they kind of came back later on because people were Die Harder.
Die Hard 2 starts. He's at Dulles. And it's okay. Then they cut the William Sadler naked in his apartment doing yoga. I don't know. And I was like, Tai Chi, all right, whatever. That's the point
where... Don't get so defensive about the most horrible scene in the movie. All right? It's the worst scene.
It's awesome.
It reminded me of Punisher, the first Punisher movie.
I was a kid and I was like, I reject this.
I reject everything about this.
Here's what will be interesting is that John McTiernan was going to direct it.
Oh, why didn't he?
And then he did Hunt for Red October.
Then he did.
I'm okay with that.
Imagine the world it would have been.
Wait. Who directed this one?
Rennie Harlan.
Yeah, Rennie Harlan. And then McTiernan came back for number three.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And now he's in jail. A little side note for John McTiernan.
Oh.
That's the next because of the tapes, movie.
Right? The, was it,
yeah, because he taped the guy for the roller, what was it? Roller games? Roller?
Something roller like that.
Ball. Some, roller, thank you.
Yeah, roller ball. Uh-huh,
there he is.
A great movie.
Well.
The original one.
Yeah.
I forgave Sadler. Go I was like, okay, it. he's not too bad. It what kind of really annoyed me about this movie is not only is she trapped on a plane, she's trapped on a plane with the guy from the first film again.
Okay, I loved that whole aspect.
Oh yeah, I
loved it. I loved that whole. That's like the only thing about the movie I actually love.
That she's on the plane with that.
Yes,
I hated those characters. Hated that so everyone came back together like it was like summer camp. Right. You know, like there's Reginald Bell Johnson. Oh, well, how are you?
He's in the movie like 2 minutes.
Yeah, but I mean that he's there at all.
Yeah,
you know. And then
he needed a paycheck.
The wife and the well, everybody needs a paycheck.
He was on.
I get it.
He was on a. What was he on?
He's doing okay.
What's the name of that show? What is the name
family
of that show?
Family Matters?
Yeah, Urkel. Told them true.
Family Matters. Unless you're a neighbor, now family doesn't matter.
good times.
Well, you know, one thing, I'll give this movie has a really good cast. It's got Dennis Franz, Fred Thompson, the asshole guy again, William Sadler. These are all great actors.
John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo was in this movie.
He has a small cameo. He was supposed to have a larger part, but they realized how short he was.
The T-1000 is in it.
T-1000's in it.
Robert Patrick's in it. He's one of the mercenaries.
Mm-hmm. No,
he's the one. He's like a sitting duck. Was that the line?
Literally, I've not seen this movie.
He's like, what do you look like? A sitting duck.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, this is the only one of the five that is not actually about stealing money.
Stealing money, right?
This is actually about terrorism and like trying to free these terrorists.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have liked it more if they were just trying to steal some money. Maybe
it got a little too political for its...
Hey, I'm going to blow a plane up with a Zippo. That could happen.
Yeah.
The fight on the plane wing's pretty good.
Yeah.
And that guy really dies a horrible way.
Yeah.
And then he blows up the plane.
Mm-hmm. With a Zippo.
With a Zippo.
Yeah. That's not only awesome...
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
I can't even finish. That was the worst.
Sean, you're being really quiet over there, and I see you've got notes. What do you want to
say? No, most of my notes are for three.
On.
Two, I watched again. Like, I saw it way back when it first came to VHS, and I watched it again a few weeks ago, and I wasn't a big fan. Like, I understand that she's got to be in trouble, which I'm glad they got rid of, but he needs to have more stakes for why he's got to save these planes. Okay, it's his wife, but it just felt so shoehorned in.
Like I will totally admit that like once they blow up the first plane, like they didn't think that like, oh, we can see the ground now. Like there's some loop, there's some plot holes.
The snow, it's snowing
like,
really
it's
heavy.
Snowing really hard. Yeah.
Like the first
one. We planned for this snow.
Yeah. Like the first one justifies every little, like they justify him taking off his shoes so well. Like every little detail you just flow so easily and is totally believable, whereas the second one is just like, okay, you gotta take this for granted. Here we go.
And you know, there's two other airports like really near.
There are
two large airports.
Right,
Lawrence.
Oh, Reagan wasn't around back then.
No, right.
You don't know. Back in like what was it, 89, 90? They were
90.
Pilots were so stubborn. If they had an airport to get to, they
is that a thing among pilots?
They were also like, coked out. It didn't matter.
Yeah, like pilots are like, well, remember 1990s version of us? We were also stubborn. We've really learned a lot.
Yeah, thank God we
learned a lot. Like pilots in different eras have different characteristics. Really,
gas is so cheap. Let's just loop it around. And
keep looping.
I'm not going to that other airport. I'd rather spin around in circles.
I was also really annoyed with the janitor who knew all things.
Oh, magical janitor?
Magical janitor.
There's a magical janitor.
Can I get out to the Atena dish? You can, with this wand and these aliens on your trail.
Like, that's true, but like if you look at a lot of 80s movies, there's always some like weird homeless dude or some window washer or some guy.
Was he
with
an
no
employee
legs,
or was he just
like,
living there?
I know everything.
It's dangerous to go alone.
Yeah.
Take this.
I liked
these walkie talkies. Is one of these, oh, this works for you?
Like, yeah. They introduced
code in.
They introduced Dennis Franz, who is Captain Lorenzo, who is a huge dick to John McClane, who's a hero, who's a nationwide hero at this point. Thankfully, they offset that with Fred Thompson, who is, I forget his name, but he's the operations officer for Dulles, who kind of believes McClane, which it's nice to not see them like go down the exact same route of stupid cops are in my way.
Right.
I don't know if you know this, but Fred Thompson has the greatest line in movie history.
In this movie or
in another movie? Not in this movie.
What is it?
Your average Drewski don't take a dump without a plan. Just saying.
You gotta say that once more.
Say it one more.
Your average Drewski don't take a dump without a plan.
Your average Drewski don't take a dump without a plan.
Correct.
That's a good line. You're right.
Yeah.
I don't think it beats, and actually, here's the only part of Die Hard 2 that I like.
Yeah.
Here it is. The only part.
Let's hear it.
Is when he says, just the facts, ma'am.
Just the facts.
And he's given a literal fax.
Oh.
Ouch.
You don't like when he ejects from the plane exploding?
I hate that moment.
Are you talking about the most egregious use of green screen in the history of film?
Yeah, he doesn't care. He's just going up there and he's just having a fun time.
Yeah, like,
you know what?
You can see Bruce Willis make eye contact with every crew member.
And it is funny that the grenades take 30 to 45 seconds.
Oh, what do I do? Oh, I should think about this. here's another one.
From the first grenade goes in to the last one, and they're all waiting. Apparently, all the grenades are waiting. On each other before they go off. I'm ripping into it, and I like it. That's the thing.
There's one thing I want to mention about John McClane that I forgot to mention when we were talking about him. I love that he's so amused with the destruction that he's wrought. Like, whenever there's an explosion, he's just like, oh, yeah! He just starts laughing at himself, at the situation.
Each movie, he gets more and more cartoon-like.
He does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the threat's gone.
You know, there's no stakes. Yeah, yeah.
No.
Like, the fifth movie, just to jump forward to the fifth movie. Yeah. The fifth movie, like, immediately when shit starts going down in Russia, he's just like,
think about it.
He's not even thinking about the shit that he's doing. He's just like, Jack, where did you go? You know, he's like,
apparently Jimmy Stewart was John McClane in the fifth movie.
and in four, the same, like, in the first one, his humor is great because he's funny and realistic without taking away any of the stakes and without, like, making fun of the thing. It comes more from a place of, you know, this is ridiculous and I'm scared and I'm using humor to kind of get through it. Whereas, like, in the fourth one, it's like he has a little comedian.
It's the one
and see, the thing is that I think, like, it's... jokes. And one of the things I feel, it's like because he now has a sidekick. Mm-hmm. Like, it's no longer just McClane figuring it out and doing it on his own. It's more of a Laurel and Hardy, like Samuel Jackson to McClane.
But that's an incredible combination to me.
I think they do it better in the third movie than they do in any of the other.
I think they had so much success with it in the third movie that they thought that they could repeat that.
I think they thought they had to have it in the other movie from now on.
Right.
All
right.
That's Die Hard 2. Now,
you sound so happy to like, ugh, right, we got over that. Let's
we move to Die Hard.
It was a horrible movie. That's
Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Die Hard.
So,
keep dying.
Quick plot synopsis. Someone is out to get old John McClane. John McClane starts receiving phone calls while he's in New York, basically tasking him with going about the city doing all these strange tasks. Yeah, I walked right into that.
Yep,
good.
That's
good. Tasculate it.
Tasculate it. You eventually find out that the villain is trying to pull off a major heist and is related to Hans Gruber, is actually Hans Gruber's brother, trying to get revenge against John McClane, against, I guess, the world in general, America, I don't know. Very quick synopsis. So who likes this movie? Who likes 3? Who thinks...
Loved it.
Love 3.
Is this your second favorite?
Second best Die Hard movie.
Second favorite.
Your second, without a doubt.
Second favorite, Rob.
Yep.
Yep.
Sean.
Yeah, it's my second favorite.
Yeah. Oh,
it's my
no.
third favorite.
It's your third favorite.
Third favorite.
Okay.
But it goes...
Okay.
It goes
this is tied... I think this is tied for me for second best with the fourth one.
Really?
I will. That makes me hate you. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
No, yeah.
You know, he uses a car in the fourth one to take down a helicopter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But he's an analog guy.
We're living in a stereo.
You know, he uses a.
I wasn't going there. I was going to wait till we got to the movie for that one.
Even the direct. Okay, yeah, keep going.
You know, he uses power lines to take down a helicopter in this movie. In the most anticlimactic death of any of the villains.
In which movie?
This one. He fires.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
One bullet left.
It was like, oh yeah, like
Saturday Night Special, and he just.
So let's talk about all the good things about Die Hard with a Vengeance.
There's a reason why this is happening again.
I do really like that.
That's my big thing with all the others. It's not just like, oh no, here we go.
Yeah.
This is specifically happening to him.
It's a revenge flick.
It is a revenge flick. Yeah.
With an added bonus of bunch of gold.
Yeah.
Yep.
And yeah, well, that was for me the best part was that there was an unraveling, right? Like he really did have to go from point to point and actually solve riddles, which is hilarious, you know? Like he had to, like a mystery, like he had to uncover these things and there were high stakes with each one. Like, you
and
know?
I don't believe
Batman
he actually solved a single one.
It was only Samuel Jackson.
Or somebody
else. Which makes
sense
why he has the partner.
Or a truck driver.
Because McClane would have been dead. Yeah,
yeah, but
he
only has the partner because Simon says, bring the partner. Had he not, John McClane would have died at the first riddle.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, like...
But that's John McClane, man.
It is,
barely
but
making
it's,
it by.
It's a very... I don't know. I feel that's a very weak plot thread. Like, thank God he ran into Zeus, or he wouldn't have been able to solve any of these riddles. It's like
movies.
It's like Simon wrote the
quizzes
for Zeus.
Well, it's...
And not John McClane.
For me, it's like he
was trying to kill him.
He was.
Yeah, he's got this thing John McClane does where he uses what he's got at his disposal, right? And with Samuel L. Jackson, it's the same thing. It's just a tool that he's using. Like, not that Samuel L. Jackson didn't prove himself over and over, you know, or Zeus proved himself over and over, but it's like, it's the same thing with the fire hose off the side of the building. You know, shit, there's a huge fire in this building. Fire hose, got it, right? Ah, shit, I gotta solve this riddle. Samuel L. Jackson will do it for me, you know?
Yeah, Samuel L. Jackson's the
fire hose
figuring out the work.
It is. He's the fire hose.
John McClane never said, I want to bring him with me. Simon said, bring him with you.
Yes.
Yeah. It was never John's idea to bring him because he was a useful asset. He was forced
John McClane
to.
John McClane likes to work alone.
He does.
See, but it's a situation stuff. He was forced into.
Right, but you were implying that
well,
he
was
making
forced it. Onto that rooftop, you know, with flames on it. Like, I don't know.
He didn't want to
I don't think he planned on getting out of the inner city. I don't think, what's his name?
Simon.
Planned on him getting out of the inner city kids.
Ah, yeah.
Because the thing was still going to blow up. He had these contingency plans just in case he did. But he was just going to shoot him in the stadium anyway.
True.
I mean, it's not like he expected him to live.
Yeah, but I think he at least expected him to live up through the subway.
He was going to blow it regardless, though.
Yeah, he was
going to
blow it
was
up
their
regardless.
Yeah.
But he needed a reason to blow it up so they don't look into the aspect.
So no one would catch on.
His goal is. It's kind of it was his little misdirect.
You know, you mentioned, like, this is the reason why this is happening to him, which I feel like they looked at the second movie and they're like, okay, we can't keep putting this guy in situations like this. Like, he has to be in this situation for a reason. I really do, like, I don't know. This is a love-hate relationship with me because I like Jeremy Irons Simon, and I like that he's linked to Hans in the first one. And they even give him his own, like, what is the song? Is it Brahms? Is there another Beethoven?
The soldiers come marching in, yeah.
Yeah, they kind of do a similar thing where once he gets to the gold, like, his music is all playing and it's all happy. But I felt it retread some things that the first movie already did, and I felt the first movie just did it better. You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, it was this weird line for me of paying homage and trying to link it, but at the same time, just mimicking it, you know? And I don't know, that's where, for me, it kind of...
The one thing I liked that Simon did, and, like, he's probably my second favorite villain in the whole series, because all the others are kind of meh.
Yeah.
Although I love Timothy Olyphant in the fourth one. But anyway.
I really did.
I'll tell you why I did there. Yeah. But he tried to screw over his own people and just take the gold.
Yeah.
I do like that, you know, he wasn't in it with his people. He was in it for himself.
And he definitely wasn't Hans Gruber, because he was messing up. Like, even Otto was like, stop screwing around with McClane and focus. And Simon still wanted to kill him.
I like that he was a flawed villain. Mm-hmm. Like, he was not as good at this as Hans was. Like, whenever he talked to McClane, he would start getting upset and start stuttering and kind of screwing up his own plans.
He was stuttering on purpose.
Yeah.
Oh, was it on purpose? Yeah. Oh, never mind. Yeah. When do you find out it was on purpose?
He mocks it.
He mocks it.
Yeah. Like, he's talking to one of the other people in his crew, and he makes fun of his own stutter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why was he stuttering?
To make him think...
That he was like...
It was because of the psychological profile.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, go ahead and think that.
They sort of distract him with, I really am focused on McClane.
Yeah.
And instead of, I'm robbing you guys.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great... Yeah, it's another caper with misdirection.
The FBI actually went to the screenwriter about Fort Knox or whatever. Where was it they knock over? What's it called?
The Federal Reserve.
They were like, how did you get that done so well? Like, that's that's like almost an exact replica of the Federal Reserve. And he's like, well, there's a tour you can take. And they're like, what? And they didn't know that it was that. And they changed it after that because they're like, no, you're not supposed to know that.
That's awesome.
Tour guy typed in the code. 118.
You're like,
I picked up this bar.
Yeah.
Souvenir.
The greatest misdirection was the the schools are under threat the whole movie, and like that was the biggest part for me was like, what are you going to do with the schools? Like, they're going to blow up this huge thing in the school, and then you see it lift up, and you don't quite on the ship you don't quite really understand what's going on, and then he's like, I'm not a monster, I'm not going to blow up a bunch of kids, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh. Oh,
he's a nice guy.
I like him.
You take it, boy.
He's what a great guy.
I will say the one thing that I know, I remember noticing it even when I saw it in the movie theater, that they were getting too far ahead of themselves in regards to special effects, and CGI was on the dump truck in the tunnel with the water behind him. Like, that was so... It didn't look Die Hard. Like, at that point...
It looked like Die Hard 2.
It didn't look like Water Spout.
It sure did.
And that's what I liked.
Yeah,
it
was like a steaming pile of crap, Die Hard 2.
That one moment was Die Hard 2 underwater.
No, it was a cold, hard pile of crap.
Yeah, it was awful.
It wasn't even fresh.
I'm going to watch it again tonight.
Was this...
I am too.
Was this before Pulp Fiction or after?
I believe it was after, but I can tell you real quick.
I think didn't we look it up? It was like a year, like 6 months after.
Because everyone was like, whoa, Samuel Jackson.
Released after, but shot after?
I don't know.
I can tell you in just a few minutes. Talk amongst
yourselves. He is singing
Counting
Flowers on the Wall, which was used in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Which led me to believe that Pulp Fiction was done first, and he was referencing Pulp Fiction as a side joke.
Or maybe Quentin Tarantino was just like, hey, another thing from a movie I can rip off.
Pulp Fiction came out in 94.
True.
And this is 93. Oh, is this 95?
Yeah,
it's 95. I think it's like something early 95. Like that, Pulp Fiction was late 94.
Really? That's not one of his first movies that pops up?
Well, what do you all think of Samuel Jackson in this?
This is great, man.
Samuel Jackson.
He's Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
I mean, Samuel Jackson every movie's in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Occasionally Samuel Jackson does non-Samuel Jackson stuff, and you're like,
Unbreakable.
Oh. Unbreakable, or what was it, The Red Violin? And you're like,
oh, that's a great movie.
What's up, Samuel?
I have not seen that movie.
And that's an incredible movie.
The rest of the time, he's like solid Samuel Jackson.
Yeah, check it out, man. It's a drama. It's good.
God, he's been in a lot of movies.
I like it. I like the character. I think, like, right from his first scene, they establish everything. And that's what I like about this movie, is they establish so much so well. Like, in the first one that they justify everything, they justify so much. Like, 95. His first scene, you see the kind of guy he is. He's looking out for his nephews. Yeah. He's, you know, he's community-minded. He's thinking about his little, you know, his Harlem community. And so that's kind of what motivates him for the rest of the time is... He doesn't necessarily care about New York as a whole, but he's thinking about more than just himself.
I love that bit in the movie where they disarm the bomb, or they get rid of the bomb, and he's like, you can't leave the bomb. What about the kids? And then he takes it to the two terrorists, and the one terrorist is like, what about the kids? You can't leave it here. It's like, those terrorists, those terrorists care.
They're not that bad.
Aww.
Yeah.
Oh, well, those guys,
you take the money. Take the reserve.
Yeah. I mean, that is a good point that we just brought up, is that those movies are really good at making you like the other guys.
Yeah.
Like, even as much as they're the bad guys, you kind of root for Hans Gruber.
They decide to interject humor in really interesting ways. Like, Sean, you mentioned the two brothers in the first one who, like, you can tell they have, like, this brotherly relationship where he's, like, cutting lines right over his head.
They show it so quickly and well that you see their relationship. And
that's, like, 10 seconds.
In a second. It's just like, nope, I'm cutting this now. And his, you know, his younger brother's like, no, I'm not done. And
but in a German gibberish.
Yeah, in a German gibberish. Yeah. Way.
The napkin, the napkin!
That's fun and it's, you know, whatever. And so that shows for the rest of the movie. So, you know, when he kills his younger brother, oh, you know, this guy's going to go nuts. And you understand just how...
Dance all over him.
Yeah, just how angry he is. And they, you know, they set that up so well.
Did any of you see this one in the theater?
Yes.
Yes, I saw this one in the theater for sure.
I saw in the theater.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, faux show.
Well, any other comments on Die Hard with a Vengeance?
I love talking about setting it up. I love the fact that in, like, when they first get McClane and he's, you know, hungover, they set up everything for the rest of the movie. They talk about the dump trucks. Mm-hmm. They talk about his badge number, which sets up, you know, they do it enough times without making it obvious, but they, you know, say it enough times that you remember it, and they, so just within that little ride.
They talk about his headache that comes back on the ship, and he's like, I've got a headache all day.
Yeah.
And he gives him that.
Yeah, he gives him that. Oh, it's great.
And when Simon gave him the one thing I don't like about this movie is they tried to pull Holly back into it right at the end.
By having him call her.
Mm-hmm. That's the one thing. I was like, you know what? Just give it a divorce and let it go.
Yeah, well, that ultimately ends up happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I liked Simon so much. I felt his death was really cheap because he's chasing John. John's on foot. He's in the helicopter. He's trying to shoot him and not, I don't know, he gets filled
so
with
amped up
that he wants to like get close to him with the helicopter, and then he just happens to fly under some power lines that John shoots with his one last bullet, and I was like, I want him to like punch him. I want it to be like a really physical confrontation, but oh well. Yeah, I want him to plummet from the 38th floor of the Nakatomi building again.
It was
a good idea that it wasn't scene.
I mean, they can't,
it doesn't necessarily done well. It was it could have been better, but it wasn't poor.
Because it's the first time they actually, you know, see each other.
Yeah.
So it is a neat moment, but yeah.
One little Easter egg that I noticed when I was watching them over again, because it's only because I watched them back to back, is that I noticed in the first one, the truck they show up is Atlantic Courier. That's the truck they drive into Nakatomi Towers. The beginning of Die Hard 3, you see Pacific Courier right outside the place
exploding.
Before it gets blown up, and that's a McTiernan thing.
Like, nice.
And originally I thought, I was like, oh, it's the same Atlantic Courier, and I was like, oh no, that one's Pacific.
On
that's
the
Atlantic.
Opposite ocean.
That's hilarious.
That's very funny.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. Nice. Yeah.
Well done, McTiernan. Well done.
Well done.
All right, we're pushing near an hour, so that only leaves us a little time to discuss perhaps the least two liked movies in the entire series.
Garbage.
Live Free or Die Hard.
Awful.
Which came out in 2007.
Who cares? It was terrible.
What do you guys think of this film?
I enjoy it.
I enjoy it too.
Is it comic booky? Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, the characters have just gotten so far gone at this point that they're so one-dimensional. Like, even, like, I like Timothy Oliphant as an actor, and I do like his villain in this, but he's got no redeeming qualities.
No, he's...
yeah, and he doesn't have... What I love about 1 and 3 is they're enjoying the caper. Mm-hmm.
And
so
he doesn't enjoy it.
He's just evil.
He's conflicted, and, oh, I don't want to do this, but I have to.
But he's still stealing a buttload of money.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like...
Meh. I would be pissed, too, if Maggie Q got killed.
Right?
Yeah, like, no, I would be too. Really, bummed. Yeah.
This is definitely like a post 9/11 film. Like, it's all about terrorism. It's all about cyber terrorism, which I felt was a huge thing in like 2004 to 2008. This movie reminds me so much of Enemy of the State, but just John McClane is in it instead of Will Smith.
Well, I think they also got into the problem that I had a problem with earlier. Like, at that point, it's no longer Die Hard in something. It's just
Die Hard in the world. Like, yeah, you know, yeah, he's going...
Well, that's... And that was the at least the thing I could appreciate about the first three was Die Hard. Okay, we've got an isolated building. Right. Okay, number two. All right, at least we're sticking to one airport. Number three. All right.
New York.
Just New York. Die Hard 4. We can't stop anywhere. Yeah. We're going to take a helicopter over to DC.
Die Hard in the United States. Yeah. Die Hard in space.
Die Hard the world.
And apparently everything is 2 hours from everywhere.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
I did like Kevin Smith in the movie.
Oh yeah, Kevin Smith was nice.
Yep. God, I hated that.
Aww.
How do you like Ramona Flowers being in the movie? I don't remember the actress's name that plays his daughter.
Yeah. I like her. I like her.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
No. That's fair. Yeah, I'm with him.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know, one thing that I know this movie is really levied against it is it's PG-13.
Yeah.
I have only seen the unrated version, which has all the violence and language.
You should see the version we all had to see.
I saw it in the theater, and it was like, atrocious.
The only one I watch anymore is the unrated one.
Yeah. The unrated one has...
I haven't seen the unrated one.
I haven't either.
It's unrated.
Is the moment when, like, the
is
dude...
Is it better?
Little,
it's definitely
it?
Better
Raphael,
as far as, like...
the little ninja dude falls through the thing and goes... Like, there's blood everywhere.
Oh, yeah, there's blood everywhere.
And that's,
like,
another McClane moment of like, whoa!
Oh, that sucks.
That didn't happen.
No, like, if you take out his ability to swear, you lose a lot of John McClane. You lose a lot of that beautiful, just visceral
tearing you
apart with the language as I beat you up with my fists.
At that point, you don't have any of his humor. It's all, like, I like Justin Long. I find him funny. But it's all his humor, and it's all
it
very
is.
One-liney.
And Justin Long was really big in 2007.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it undermines
guy.
Any kind of
yeah,
stakes.
It does.
Like, it's not, you know, no longer is anybody in danger now. It's
and I mean, in regards to, like, quote, realistic fighting and stuff, that's the moment where it was just like, A jet versus a semi truck, and it no longer felt like real stakes.
No, well, it was like some kid like banging his toys together.
Yeah, Lynn Wiseman even said, he's like, after seeing it, I wish I hadn't done the jet thing. He's like, that didn't fit.
I think that's why they introduced the sidekick characters, is because John McClane is safe. Mm-hmm. It's Zeus. It's Matthew Farrell. It's his son. These are the characters who could die. John McClane is untouchable.
You know, you said sidekick, and for a second, I thought you said psychic.
I thought he did.
I was like,
Oracle.
This that would be awesome. Really interesting.
Yeah. I don't remember that. It's in the unrated version.
Oh, God. I gotta watch that.
Sean, you have the Blu-rays of this, right?
Yeah, except for two.
Now,
I have two.
Now, this Blu-ray package just came out recently, right? Like the new quadrilogy, whatever they call it.
Uh-huh.
Now, they only have the PG-13 Live Free or Die Hard on there, don't they?
I think so.
They
That's
don't
why
have the
I,
unrated
I haven't
version?
Seen the unrated version.
I'm really surprised about that.
Yeah, because I'd like to see that in high def. Yeah.
Get out. You know what? Just for that, A Good Day to Die Hard, the final film.
Yes.
It just it came out, 4 months ago?
Yeah.
5 months ago?
I don't know. February 14th.
Have you all seen it?
I haven't seen it.
I've seen it.
I love the release date.
I saw it for free. Because I bought that DVD set.
Nice. See, that's,
gave me a free ticket.
That's
like,
what
okay.
this movie makes you do. It's like, I didn't see it on purpose. No. I
no,
wasn't
I,
involved.
I, bit towards I it. Saw no. it on purpose.
I was walking
paid
down
for
there,
it
like,
on
knocked out.
Opening day.
You know what the tagline is, right?
Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Russia.
Mother Russia.
Oh.
My biggest gripe, okay, and this is literally my biggest gripe with this film, is he does not have that line in the movie at all.
Yeah, he does. Mm. Doesn't he?
Mm-mm.
Because he's laying down in the street.
I didn't hear it if he did. He said it under his breath.
I think he has it.
Yeah, he's got it.
I don't remember it.
He's got it.
Well, this movie has one thing I really like.
Okay.
The taxi cab driver at the beginning.
Yes.
Who's like, I sing for you. That's like the best taxi cab driver ever.
Yep.
Like, that guy took that part and just went to the stars with it. And whoever you are, taxi cab driver... Russian taxi cab driver in this bit part.
I've seen the internet.
Tell you his name in justice.
I thought you were great.
That's the kind of stuff they're looking for. Mm-hmm. Claire Russian Simon and O'Connor casting and PR. Sure they want you to take it and go
just
with
it. Just take
him.
It and go. And yeah, like I felt this movie kind of retreaded some of the stuff that the fourth one did as far as like,
kid.
I've got a daughter who doesn't like me. I've got a son who doesn't like me.
I got a theory about that.
All right.
All right. Okay, so this is my theory. It's the super unification theory of Die Hard.
Sons and daughters don't like fathers?
No. Okay. This is good. You're going to like this, all right? So the first movie, the events of Die Hard, all of that really happened. That's a real thing for John McClane, right? Except at the end of the movie, he doesn't survive the shooting by Carl, right? He dies. Oh. He gets shot by Carl, right?
Oh,
Carl. And the other four movies are his brain rapidly firing off neurons and creating these narratives where none exist. And let me go into some detail here, all right? So the second movie, it's the four major themes of his life, right? The second movie is his wife. Mm-hmm. The third movie is his career. And the last two movies are his two kids.
My God.
Right? So it's the four themes of his life, right? But the thing, obviously, that he cares about most, his job, more than his wife or his kids, that's the best movie, right? What we also have is the events of the first Die Hard echoing throughout the remaining movies, right? So, a helicopter exploding in a creative way in every movie, right?
Right.
The guy falling in slow motion in the fifth movie, mm-hmm. you know? In the fourth movie, you know, he's talking about how he's getting old. The fifth movie has Chernobyl references and Reagan references, which nobody makes anymore.
Right.
And that's because they were current in the 80s, you know?
And William Sadler being naked.
Yeah.
Because
John McClane is gay.
Blatant homosexual tendencies.
So you're saying Carl Winslow killed Bruce Willis is what you're saying.
I'm saying that he may have, but I'm saying McClane dies at the end of Die Hard, and the rest of it is just fanciful dreams.
Nice.
That actually holds up really well.
Nice, that's good. I won't dispute.
I'm not gonna
Although
say it's
I think
wrong.
Argyle would have played a much bigger part in the rest of it.
Everyone's like just pops up with a teddy bear.
Argyle. That's Samuel L. Jackson. Yeah. All right.
Yes. Yes.
That's Argyle coming back for you.
That's fine.
All right. Well, we're kind of nearing the end of our podcast here. A couple questions to take us out. First off, any favorite scenes? And you can pull from any of the films, but obviously we all love the first one.
We talked about it. Yeah, the glass breaking.
Yeah, okay. Hans Gruber falling. Oh, that's such a great
reference to the watch at the beginning.
Yes.
And then pop.
You know, I heard some trivia about that, that obviously they're filming Alan Rickman in slow motion.
Let him go on two.
They let him go on two rather than on three, so he would actually be surprised about it.
Yeah.
Supposedly, he was very pissed.
I would be.
But that's genuine fear in his eyes.
Yeah. It's brilliant. It's great.
Yeah. The scene right after walking on the glass when he's breaking down, I love that. Because he plays it well, and I think it's a heartfelt moment which doesn't exist in other action films.
I really like the scene where... he comes across Hans and he starts doing an American accent. He just drops his British. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, he's so smart.
Which was added later.
Mm-hmm. It was added later.
Incredible. I like the scene. It's also from the first movie, of course.
The first
movie. Where he's passing by the topless poster for the second
time.
Yeah. And he's like, for good luck, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, we've been in this hallway. I remember that poster. And he's like, of course you do. And he's like, so good.
Good times. I think that might be my final question. Is there anything else you guys, any other final thoughts?
You said
to bring
alternate
home
titles.
Oh, yeah,
I've got a few
myself. This was the one that really...
All right.
Okay.
So here was the homework assignment.
I
charged them with attempting to come up with the title of the next Die Hard film.
Mm.
Should a sixth one be made? I'll start first.
Okay.
Should another movie be made, I think it will be called, if you can't beat him, Die Hard.
I've got one. Okay, he goes after Somali pirates.
Okay.
And it's just called Die Hard.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's good.
He joins the British to take down spies, and it's Live and Let Die Hard.
Nice.
Oh, right. Nice.
I think it's just going to be called Try Hard.
And it's just him at 80 trying to like
and it's just him trying so hard.
Die Hard 6, Die Hardester.
Yeah. I was thinking, die? ? Hardly.
This summer, Bruce Willis must carry another movie with very little help in I Just Died Hard in Your Arms Tonight.
Nice.
That's good.
This summer, like John McClane must travel back in time, meet the rest of the Gruber family. Eddie Murphy is the Gloopers in Diet Hard.
I read that before you said it.
I was also, here's my last one. All right, here it is. The Hard, the.
Yep.
Give it a second.
Simpsons yep. there. Nice. Well, I think we've talked enough about Die Hard.
Never.
Go watch yet. Out. Go watch the first movie. It's brilliant. And then mm-hmm. watch the others at your own leisure if you wish. How is the Blu-ray edition? Are they pretty good?
Good.
Okay.
It's slightly clearer.
So crisp. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't initially filmed on HD. So right. It's only...
Well, neither was Alien, but Alien looks amazing on Blu-ray. So I didn't know if they went and... They didn't go that extra mile.
I didn't notice it, but I don't always notice those. Yeah.
What did you say?
That said, in space, no one can hear you die hard.
The die hard of the moon.
Yeah.
Well, that is the Nerd Outcast podcast. I have been your host, Chris Bashan, and my guests tonight have been...
Lawrence Kerr.
Zach Munn.
Rob Shoemate.
Sean Okenberg.
Thank you, gentlemen, and thank you for listening.